Good afternoon. If you have your Bible with you, would you take it out, please, and turn to James chapter 3. James chapter 3. We'll begin reading in verse 5 here in just a moment. James chapter 3, beginning in verse 5. Thank you for being here tonight. Whether you're in person or streaming online, we're grateful that you've chosen Spiritual Things this afternoon. We have a number of our members who are traveling for the spring break holiday, but we also have some visitors here. A number of people that we know well who are back from college or back because they're on a break, including some visitors from the O'Connor Road Church of Christ in San Antonio. We're grateful for the Morenos and that they are with us tonight as well. Thank you for being here. Let's think for a few minutes about God's Word and hopefully something that's very practical for us tonight. Sticks and stones may break my bones, but words can never hurt me. That's not in the Bible, but there is some truth to it. It's a good attitude, and our children need to remember it. But never, never, words can never hurt me. Maybe that's too far. And I know I can be the kind of person to nitpick about absolute sort of statements, but there are words that can hurt us, aren't there? Maybe not physically, but truly and deeply hurt us. You're fired. You're guilty. You have cancer. I want a divorce. I hate you. You will not surely die. All of those words have and do hurt deeply. And the tongue can be powerful. The tongue can be destructive, as we read about in James chapter 3, beginning in verse 5. Even so, the tongue is a little member and boasts great things. See how great a forest a little fire kindles. You've all read articles and know of occasions, just like I do, where somebody flicked a cigarette out the window or wasn't as careful as they should have been in putting out a campfire, and hundreds of thousands of acres of forest burned from just a little bitty, tiny fire. The tongue, though it's small, has that same kind of destructive power. And the tongue is a fire. A world of iniquity. The tongue is so set among our members that it defiles the whole body, and it sets on fire the course of nature, and it is set on fire by hell. You think about the fire that burns the hottest and lasts the longest. Certainly it would be the fires of hell. For every kind of beast and bird, of reptile and creature of the sea is tamed and has been tamed by mankind. He's speaking in generalities. I'm not sure if anybody's tamed every beast of the field and bird of the air and every creature of the sea, but the idea is man has dominion over those things. And even the ones we haven't tamed, well, we've sure been able to kill them, right? And so that's the image in comparison to the tongue. Verse 8, but no man can tame the tongue. It is an unruly, like an unruly child, you know, you can't control them, or maybe restless. My grandmother on my dad's side, she had restless legs at night. And I remember, I'm a deep sleeper, but I remember hearing her throughout the house. Pitter-patter, 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 pitter-patter. She's up, she's going. It's kind of her personality a little bit too, but this restless, always moving, always out of control, evil, full of deadly poison. That is described when a tongue is unbridled. And it describes how difficult it is to bridle a tongue. But a bridled tongue has that same sort of power for the good, for the edifying. Words like, let there be light. It's a boy, or more importantly, it's a girl. How about the phrase, I do, especially when standing across from the person you want to spend the rest of your life with. I love you. Or I believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of the living God. The tongue has power for good or for bad. Proverbs chapter 18 and verse 21 talks about that very thing. As we think about bridling the unbridled tongue, there are a couple of things that I want to accomplish this evening. First of all, I want you to see that this horse has four legs, not five. And though, yes, that's AI, I think it looks pretty good up there as we have this fiery, unbridled horse, bridling the unbridled tongue. So that's the first thing. The second thing that I want to accomplish is, I'm about a class behind on Wednesday night in my class in James, and so I said, hey,
I can preach on Sunday night, and so we're going to have our lesson from our next set of texts there in the book of James, James chapter 3. But third, I really did want to do this in a sermon format, because from the very youngest of us to the very oldest of us, not just the people who might be in the adult class on a Wednesday night, all of us must learn to bridle our tongues. So let's think about that for a few minutes this evening, bridling the unbridled tongue. And we begin thinking about how our speech is an essential part of our religion. So Proverbs chapter 18 and verse 21 says, "Death and life are in the power of the tongue, and those who love it will eat its fruit." In other words, if you love to speak bad things, you're going to eat the fruit of that. You're going to receive back what it is that you say. If you love to speak good things, you're going to receive back in terms of life. But life and death, they're both in the tongue. And the tongue has the power in each direction. And so we have to be careful. We have to be careful how we use our tongue. Are we just going to babble and use it for ill? Or are we going to guard it carefully and use it for good? Now, clearly, James indicates that the tongue is often used for evil. And that's important, because the average person speaks 16,000 words a day. Now, that's the average person. This is one of these dumb things that we say whenever we talk about the average. Some people talk more than that. Some people talk less than that. Yeah, Reagan, that's why it's called the average, right? But we all know people, 16,000 words is not nearly enough to cover all the words they say in a day, present company included. But in a little over a week, if you're close to average, you're going to speak in a week. You're going to speak the equivalent of the New Testament. The most powerful words of life, that's how many words are going to come out of your mouth over the course of a week. So what are those words going to do? Are they going to set on fire those around you, or are they going to be the kinds of words that give life and breathe life into others? So for the Christian, that process begins when we see our speech as a part of our religion, that it's vital to our religion. And that's one of the arguments that James makes in James chapter 1 and verse 26. If anyone among you thinks he is religious, that's your perception, James chapter 1 and verse 26, and does not bridle his tongue, but deceives his own heart, this one's religion is useless. The things that we say, the way we use our mouth, is not just a peripheral sort of thing to who we are as Christians. It's vital to living the Christian life. And some may say, and have said, well, what I say is not really what's important, but what's important is who I am on the inside. Well, James says, you deceive your own heart. You might think you're right with God, but you can't be if that's your attitude. You're not really religious, not in the true and right sense, in your devotion to God. If you are unbridled in your tongue, you still have one foot in the world while trying to also serve God. And the tongue is often tied to general sinfulness, other sinful things. For example, in Isaiah chapter 6 and verse 5, when God appears before Isaiah in this vision, right? And Isaiah sees God on his throne, and he falls down before God in humble submission before him because he sees his own sin. What does he say to summarize the sinful condition of man? He says, "Woe is me, for I am undone, because I am a man of what? Unclean lips. And I dwell in the midst of a people of unclean lips. For my eyes have seen the King, the Lord of hosts." Were unclean lips the only problem that the children of Israel had? Of course not. You might say, in some ways, idolatry and other things were bigger problems. But when we think about, in general terms, sinfulness, the tongue is often a stand-in for the rest of our religious life and what that looks like. There are other places where it's included in long lists. In Romans chapter 3, it's included in a list in the way we use our tongue. But I want you to turn to Ephesians chapter 5. Ephesians chapter 5, to illustrate this point. Ephesians chapter 5, and I want you to think as we read through this list of sins, identify the ones that are associated with our speech, with the tongue. So Ephesians chapter 5, beginning in verse 1. Therefore, be imitators of God as dear children, and walk in love, as Christ also has loved us and given himself for us, an offering and a sacrifice to God for a sweet-smelling aroma. But fornication and all uncleanness and covetousness, let it not even be named among you, as is fitting for the saints. Neither filthiness, nor foolish talking, nor coarse jesting, which are not fitting, but rather giving of thanks. For this you know, that no fornicator, unclean person or covetous man who is an idolater has any inheritance in the kingdom of Christ and of God. So right there, along with fornication and covetousness and idolatry, are those lesser sins, as we would see them, of foolish talking and coarse jesting. Both of those reveal a lack of consideration, a lack of thought, a lack of foresight, and a lack of spirituality. It calls to mind Jesus' admission that we will have to give an account for every idle, every careless word that we speak, as he says in Matthew chapter 12, verses 34 and 35, that it's a reflection of what's in our hearts that comes out of our mouths. And so be careful what you say, because you're going to be judged on the basis of what you speak. Our speech is a manifestation of who we really are. And if we're rotten on the inside, then our words are going to be rotten. But if we're pure and holy on the inside, then our words will reflect that purity. The way we speak is a reflection of our devotion to God, or lack thereof. And if we are allowing our speech to become ugly and sinful in any way, that means our heart is becoming ugly and sinful as well. We will give an account for every idle word that we speak. But on the other hand, if we say what is wise and thoughtful, that too is a reflection of our heart. Our character is revealed by our speech. It is essential to our religion. So the question that really begs to be asked is, how do we become better in our speech? How do we bridle our tongues? Well, what I want to do is I want us to think about that from the book of James. And so if you'll turn to James chapter 3, here's what I propose. I'm not going to turn to anywhere except the book of James for the rest of the lesson tonight. And I want us to think about some indicators of what a bridled tongue looks like. We know that we need to bridle our tongue. We know it's vitally important for us to do that, that we're going to be judged by the things that we speak, as he says in chapter 2 and verse 12. But what does that bridled tongue look like? Well, let's read in chapter 3, beginning in verse 2. For we all stumble in many things. If anyone does not stumble in word, he's a perfect man, able also to bridle the whole body. Indeed, we put bits in horses' mouths that they may obey us, and we turn their whole body. Look also at ships. Although they are so large and are driven by fierce winds, and they are turned by a very small rudder, wherever the pilot desires, even so the tongue is a little member and boasts of great things. Controlling our tongue leads us down the path to controlling the whole body. There are at least 20 different individual points that James makes about the tongue. How do you summarize all of that in one lesson, especially one that is half over? I want you to look there in James chapter 3 and verse 17. As he talks about wisdom, this is the list that James gives us. But the wisdom that is from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, willing to yield, full of mercy and good fruits, without partiality and without hypocrisy. 8 descriptions of what wisdom looks like. And if we compare those 8 things to the rest of the book of James, what we find is these are 8 indicators of what a bridled tongue looks like. And it's not every indicator of every passage in the Bible. But if we can have these eight things characterize what our speech looks like, then we'll be well on our way. And so what I'd like to do for the rest of the lesson is just look through the book of James at these eight things. And I'm going to read these passages to us. I'm going to do my best to have minimal explanation for each one, maybe just a couple of things here and there to describe them. So, a bridled tongue is pure, which means your speech is pure, not filthy. That would be the opposite, right? And that's exactly what we see there in verse 8 of James chapter 3. James chapter 3, beginning in verse 8. But no man can tame the tongue. It is an unruly evil full of deadly poison. What does that look like? With it we bless our God and Father, and with it we curse men who have been made in the similitude, the likeness of God. Out of the same mouth proceed blessing and cursing. My brethren, these things ought not to be so. Does a spring send forth fresh water and bitter from the same opening? Can a fig tree, my brethren, bear olives, or a grapevine bear figs? Thus, no spring yields both salt water and fresh. The heart and where these things come from is going to reveal what comes out. And so, filthy language out of our mouth, as Paul puts it, should not be characterizing a Christian. What does that look like? Profanity certainly is filthy talk. It's profane. Dirty jokes, well, they're dirty for a reason. False swearing, crude speech. Our speech should be characterized by purity. You know, have you ever had that experience where a kid is saying something and they say a word wrong, and you hear that word and it's a bad word, right? And you're like, oh, they said that. And then as a parent, you're kind of caught in this dilemma. You're like, do I correct it or do I just let it slide and let it go? And usually the way, you know, I've handled that when my kids were really little is, all right, I'm going to let it slide. I don't want to draw attention to it until they do it in front of other people, right? And then you're like, oh, no, what do we do now? That happened with Stephanie's brother. He had a little lisp. I'm not going to say the word because then you'll think of the bad word that goes with it. But he went around saying this in the house, and you're like, you just can't say that, right? But to that kid, that's totally pure. There's nothing bad coming behind it. But when we get the understanding of what these words mean, of what they look like, we need to be guarding our thoughts and guarding our lips about those adult things. Using bad language doesn't make you a man, or a woman, for that matter. It makes you dirty. We have a word for that, right? Trashy. Filthy. Maturity is truly found when we control our tongues, not when we just think we can say whatever we want. So, it is first pure. And as we think about the things that are pure, I think there's something to be said here for what we put into our mind, for what comes out of our lips. In Philippians chapter 4, I said we're just going to be in James, so don't turn to Philippians chapter 4. Trust me on this. Look it up on your own later on, right? What are the things that we are supposed to meditate on? Paul gives a whole list of things that we're supposed to meditate on. But what is the first thing in that list? Whatever things are pure. And so if I'm listening to music, and I'm watching shows, and I'm reading books, and I'm watching Instagram reels that have a lot of filthy language in them, those things might not come out my mouth. They might. That might lead to them coming out my mouth. But I'm putting in things that are poisoning the well of my mind and ultimately might cause it to produce bitter water. So we need to first characterize our speech with purity. Secondly, it is the things that are peaceable. Your speech is peaceable, and the opposite of that is warring. And just after where we read in verse 17, notice what it says in verse 18 and following of chapter 3. Now the fruit of righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace. That's what we're trying to accomplish with our words. They're peaceable words. And so, chapter 4 and verse 1 is really not a new thought. He continues on and says, where do wars and fights come from among you? Do they not come from your desires for pleasure that war in your members? You lust and you do not have. You murder and covet and cannot obtain. You fight and war, yet you do not have because you do not ask. You ask and you do not receive because you ask amiss that you may spend it on your pleasures. So we think about our speech where it's picking a fight with someone else. We're asking a question, but we're asking for the wrong motives when we speak to someone else. A warring speech, I can't help but think about the congressional hearings that are going on right now. Everybody's trying to score political points, right? And it's always warring. I think social media is a great example of this also. You know, you don't go on social media to see everybody agree on everything. That's not what happens. No, you're fed this warring on a constant basis. And as Christians, we can't fall into that trap where everything is an argument. Everything is a fight. When we ask for things, we're asking with the wrong motives, selfish motives, rather than peaceable motives. Now, does that mean we just lay over and die whenever there's disagreement? No. But ultimately, we should be seeking unity and peace by the things that we say. And going along with that is, an indicator of a bridled tongue is that your speech is gentle instead of being wrathful speech. If you go back to James chapter 1 and verse 19, James chapter 1 and verse 19, "So then, my beloved brethren, let every man be swift to hear, slow to speak, slow to wrath." Why? "For the wrath of man does not produce the righteousness of God." Gentle versus harsh, wrathful speech, biting, sarcastic, because we're losing our temper and it's coming out our mouth. Now, are there times where our speech should not be gentle? That our speech needs to be stronger? Anyone in a position of authority knows sometimes that needs to be the case. But may I say that is the exception, not the rule. The rule is you speak gently to others. Now, there may be an exception, but the rule is to speak gently to others. With our kids, with our spouse, with those that we love, and sometimes with our parents, young people. And sometimes we save our harshest, most honest speech for the people who are closest to us. And we speak to them in a way we wouldn't speak to anybody else in the world with this wrathful and harsh speech rather than being gentle with them. In order to bridle our tongue, our tongues need to be characterized by gentleness. That's the rule, though there may be occasional exceptions. Number four, our speech, if it is going to be bridled, needs to be willing to yield. And the opposite of that would be stubborn and boastful speech. If you're still there in James, and you ought to be, look there in chapter 4 and verse 7. Chapter 4 and verse 7. "Therefore, submit to God, that's to whom we yield. Resist the devil and he will flee from you." So it's not that we yield to everyone and anyone. We, again, just roll over and die. But we're willing to yield to what is right, what is true. We're willing to submit ourselves to God. Now, if it's the devil or those who are speaking falsehood, I'm willing to stand up against it. I'm going to resist the devil. But if it's something that's right and true, if it's someone who is according to God, I'm going to submit. And I'm going to submit to God himself. Drop down to verse 10. "Humble yourselves in the sight of the Lord, and he will lift you up." Drop down to verse 13. "Come now, you who say, today or tomorrow we will go to such and such a city, spend a year there, buy and sell, and make a profit, whereas you do not know what will happen tomorrow. For what is your life? It is even a vapor that appears for a little time and then vanishes away. Instead, you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we shall live to do this or that." That is yielding to God and his plans and his purposes. But now, when you say, "I'm going to do this, this is what I'm going to do with my life," but now you boast in your arrogance, and all such boasting is evil. When it comes to bridling our tongue, sometimes the only way to win is to be willing to lose once in a while. Certainly with God, I should be willing to lose all the time if it's me versus God. I'm yielding my will to His, but in other relationships too. My uncle has said for years and years, there are two phrases you need to learn to have a successful marriage. And speaking to men, yes, ma'am, and I'm sorry. Maybe there's a few more that you need to learn to really have a successful marriage, but what is that saying? Yes, ma'am, and I'm sorry. There's a willingness to yield. That I don't have to be right all the time. Something that I say to Steph and something that Steph says to me sometimes is, I don't want to argue. Sometimes I do. Right? Like sometimes, I don't want to argue. Well, I do because I'm right. But I don't really want to argue. Well, if I say that, or she says that to me, I need to live up to that. And if I don't really want to argue, you know what I shouldn't do? Argue! I shouldn't always have a response. I shouldn't die on every hill. But there should be times that I should be willing to yield, especially, number one, if I'm wrong. I've got to be willing to yield and admit, yes, I'm wrong. Number two, when it doesn't matter. This doesn't amount to a hill of beans. This has no eternal significance. Why am I not willing to yield? And number three, when it's outside of my control. Sometimes we, what's the phrase? We write checks with our mouth that our body's not able to cash in, something like that, right? So I say something, but I'm not actually able to control it enough to do it. I should be willing to yield in those areas and in those times. Instead of being stubborn and boastful and insisting on my own way, I bridle my tongue, which means sometimes not saying anything at all. Number five, our speech, yours and mine, should be full of mercy, not condemnation. Go to chapter 4 and go back to verses 11 and 12. Do not speak evil of one another, brethren. He who speaks evil of a brother and judges his brother speaks evil of the law and judges the law. But if you judge the law, you are not a doer of the law, but a judge. There is one lawgiver who is able to save and to destroy. Who are you to judge another? Now, again, we have to be careful not to misapply or overapply what James is saying here. He's not saying there are never situations where we have to judge what is going on with somebody else. Otherwise, how could we, as he talks about at the end of the book, snatch anybody out of the fire, bring people back from wrongdoing if we can't judge whether it's right or wrong? But if we're in the business of constantly judging and condemning other people and never showing mercy, that could be indicative of a tongue that is unbridled. Have you ever thought about what is so wrong about asking God to damn someone? Yeah, that's something that people say, right? What is so wrong about that? Well, people say it flippantly, right? Maybe they don't think about what they're saying, but what that's saying is I'm asking God to send someone to hell. I'm stepping into God's place as a judge in condemnation. Now, we would never say GD, right? But does that come out in our mouths in other ways? Are we constantly judging the words of other people, putting the worst construction on what they say, rather than seeking the best to believe all things and hope all things and bear all things from what we hear with others? Is it constant tearing down of other people, judging them for their faults and what they do wrong, or are we looking to build up? Which brings us to the next. Our speech should be full of good fruits, not constant negativity and grumbling. Notice in chapter 5 and verse 9, do not grumble. Maybe your translation says literally, groan. Do not grumble against one another, brethren, lest you be condemned. Behold, the judge is standing at the door. Again, literally, it's the moaning. Oh, this person, again, always looking for and thinking and saying the worst about other people. No one does anything good. Everyone is an annoyance. Instead, are we looking to bear good fruit through the things that we say? Good fruit in the lives of others, where we're building other people up, where we're encouraging other people and helping them to be more who it is God has called them to be. And this manifests itself in a number of ways. Sometimes our negativity and grumbling manifests itself with teasing, right? That I'm just teasing somebody else, and we can have some teasing back and forth with one another. I teased David DeYoung from the pulpit. I knew he could handle it. You know what he said to me in the parking lot? He said, I'm leading singing in about 3 weeks. What you preaching on? Well, we tease back and forth, right? There's nothing wrong with that. But when that teasing turns too close to the truth, too harsh, too sarcastic, too bitter, is it going to bear any good fruit? Is it going to improve that relationship? Is it going to help that person be more who God has called them to be? Be careful and look at the fruit of your words. Is it bearing good fruit or bad fruit? Number 7. Our speech, if it's going to be bridled, our speech should be without partiality. That is, without physical judging of others. If you go back there to chapter 2, we've already covered this section on Wednesday night, so I'll not read all the way 1 through 9, but this section talks about this idea of judging another. So begin there in verse 1. My brethren, do not hold the faith of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Lord of glory, with partiality, with favoritism. For if there should come into your assembly a man with gold rings and fine apparel, and there should also come a poor man in filthy clothes, and you pay special attention to the one wearing the fine clothes, how? By saying to him, it's manifested in our speech, you sit here in a good place, and you say to the poor man, you stand there, you sit here at my footstool. He goes on to talk about the blaspheming that sometimes takes place with those who are rich. But if you drop down there to verse 12, he says, so speak and so do as those who will be judged by the law of liberty. You're going to be judged without partiality by God. So be careful. Be careful that you're not showing partiality. What does that look like? Partial speech. Well, it could reflect racist speech, that I'm showing partiality toward one race. Sexist speech, that I'm showing partiality, physical judgment toward one sex. Bigoted speech, could apply in a number of different ways. Prejudiced speech. But let me suggest something else that maybe we don't normally think about in these terms. Doesn't gossip fall into this category? When you gossip about someone, are you saying nice things behind their back? Well, no, it wouldn't be gossip. I love it when I hear somebody saying something nice about me behind my back. That's awesome, right? But this idea of speaking behind somebody's back in a negative way, gossiping and going on about someone, that's showing partiality. I wouldn't say that about somebody I liked. I wouldn't say that about someone who was my friend, someone who was close to me. So be careful that your speech does not reflect this kind of partiality. And then finally, number 8, as we read there in chapter 3 and verse 17, your speech, if it is bridled, will be without hypocrisy. That means that it's consistent with our actions and the things that we say. Look there in chapter 2, starting there in verse 14. What does it profit, my brethren? If someone says he has faith but does not have works, can faith save him? If a brother or sister is naked and destitute of daily food, and one of you says to them, depart in peace, be warmed and filled, but you do not give them the things which are needed for the body, what does it profit? Thus also, faith by itself, if it does not have works, is dead. Again, we've covered this section. You could keep reading down really through the end of the chapter to think about faith and works. But the specific example that he uses there in verse 15 and 16 is this idea of you say one thing, but then you do something else. And if what we say and what we do don't add up, Isn't that indicative of an unbridled tongue? That I'm saying one thing, but then I'm doing something else. I'm inconsistent with my actions. If we say we love God, if we say we're religious, but we don't bridle our tongue, that's hypocrisy. And how might we have any sort of influence on others? So, if you're thinking to yourself, how can I bridle my tongue? Hear the words of James chapter 3 and verse 17. But the wisdom that is from above is first pure. Is your speech pure? Then peaceable. Are you pursuing the things of peace in your tongue? Gentle and willing to yield. Does that describe your speech? Full of mercy and good fruits, without partiality and without hypocrisy. I'm working on it, aren't you? But if this is what can, describe my speech, I am well on my way to bridling the whole body, to being who it is God has called me to be, so that ultimately I can be conformed to the image of His Son. How did Jesus speak when He was on this earth? Well, we have the accounts in the gospel record, don't we? We see the kind of speech that our Lord had, and that's the kind of speech that we should strive to have in our lives as well. It'll make an impact, because the rest of the world does not speak like this. But if we do, they can see Christ in us. Well, if you're here this evening and you're not yet a Christian, I hope that we can speak words of life to you in such a way that it would be your desire to be one with Jesus Christ, to know what it is to have faith in Him, and to have a relationship that leads to eternal life. And if you're already a Christian, really this lesson was for those of us who are Christians, and you realize your speech has not been what it ought to be. There's something that you can do with your mouth that would be very helpful, to make confession of those things to those who need to hear it. Whether it's individual confession to someone that you've spoken ill to or against, or whether it's general confession that you need to make to your brothers and sisters in Christ, we can use our mouths to pray to our Father in heaven. And He is willing and able to forgive you of any and all trespass in this or any area. If we can help you tonight, won't you come while together we stand and while we sing.
Zion's call sweetly rings.